Hi, welcome to Restoratively Yours, Belvedere Youth Club podcast series about restorative practice. I am Jenny Courtney, BYC's General Manager. We are a youth club based in Dublin in our city, and in 2019 we embarked on a journey to become a restorative hub in the community. Restorative practice, RP in short, is a philosophy and a set of practices focusing on building and maintaining good relationships and dealing with conflict in a healthy way when it occurs. For us, it has become the way we want to do everything. In this series, you will hear our story, the ups and the downs of our journey through different voices. Dorothy, our RP consultant, will guide you along the way. We hope it will be inspiring and enlightening.
Hello. In this episode, we talk about how RP supported the club in opening their door even more. So first, inclusivity is one of the club's core values. The BYC to the Power of RP project is also born from a strong desire to improve the club's inclusivity. At the start of the project, it is fair to say that the club was mostly recruiting among the local white indigenous population. It did not represent the area's diversity and gave the impression of a divide between young people. You will hear James, the RP coordinator, Dean, youth worker, and Jenny, the CEO. They talk about the progress towards more inclusivity in the club. You'll hear mentions of City Connects. It's a program offering students support, to students in local primary schools.
The organization is for the community. It's a community organization. So that was something that was rather strong, but we never got in. I believed in asset-based community development. So part of what it was like you sort of look into the community and say, like, who are the assets here and what do we need? And in that context, what I done was I went into the community. We found that there was a need for, because at the time we had a lot of Ukrainian kids coming in, we found there was a need for children were coming to the door with their parents and they were translating to their parents back in English what we were saying to the kids. And like you'd be talking to a seven-year-old and he'd be translating back to his mammy because he was broken English. So I developed during the daytime, because our club doesn't open till 3. During the daytime, I went out and reached out into the community. We found people in the community and they opened up a school. And our young people's parents go to the school from twice a week. And that's from 9 o'clock in the morning till 12 in the day. And it doesn't interfere with the running of the club itself. But like that started out with 5 people. And when I was leaving, it was over 150 people using it.
I think we've made massive steps in recent years to be more inclusive. You know, up until a couple of years ago, we couldn't cater for anybody who was in a wheelchair, you know, just because of the way the building was. So that was a massive step towards inclusivity. We've increased the amount of diverse members in our cohort, you know, which is really good and really positive, because it sort of shows other young people in the community that everybody's the same. You know, we're all kids, we're all here to have fun, you know, so that's pretty important for us. But then there is steps that we can make, you know, in terms of around, like you were saying, people with additional needs. You know, the staff are not nearly trained enough to engage with people with additional needs, and a lot of the times staff are just sort of guessing, you know, of how are just sort of, they're using our youth work skills in a sense, which are very valuable skills, you know, about being flexible, about being adaptable, you know, and how to adapt to these young people's needs. But I think more in-depth training is definitely needed for us as a staff, you know, to better engage with young people, because even though I would know how to deal with a young person without any additional needs, if they have a breakdown or if they have a sort of a moment where their emotions are up and you can't talk to them, I would be able to deal with that. But with a person with additional need, it's a lot more nuanced, I would say, in how you deal with that young person, because how they perceive how you're engaging with them is very different to how a quote unquote regular young person, I guess, would sort of perceive you. I think just because we've had a massive amount of young people presenting with additional needs to the service, particularly we've had a lot of referrals from City Connects, who have referred a lot of young people with additional needs. And we do have a section on our form which asks the parents to say if your child has any additional needs, and unfortunately they don't fill it out, maybe because they're afraid about being judged perhaps, or not being accepted into the service. And of course we wouldn't ever do that, you know, but it's very important, I think, for us to know what additional needs that child has, because otherwise we're guessing. Do you know what I mean? And we might say, oh, that child may have autism, but maybe he or she doesn't. We don't know. They could have dyspraxia. Do you know what I mean? And there's different ways to engage with a young person who has autism to dyspraxia or whatever, maybe, or whatever additional need they may have. You know, so it's very important that we get that information, but unfortunately we're not getting it from the parents at the moment. Oh. So it's tough.
I suppose, and that has been one of the keys, the key successes was in improving and increasing our diversity of membership, you know. And that was through a lot of hard work by the RP coordinator. You know, we've established links with the local City Connects programme. We have our English language school, which operates 2 days a week. That was all as a result of incorporating restorative practice. So although the English language classes are for adults, this gives us access to their young people too. You know, and we've seen that relationship blossom. For me, as the CEO of the Belvedere Youth Club, it's very important that, I suppose, diversity in our membership is a true reflection of the community in which we operate in. And there's still more work to be done on it. But looking at the membership at the moment, I only did a report the other day, we're looking at about a 70-30 ratio, 70% been Irish and 30% been new communities. But 2 years ago, we would have had less than 10%. So that's good. That's good, and that's tangible, you know, and it's about building on that now moving forward. But for me, inclusivity is key, and culture is only one thing. But then when you look at young people who may be on the spectrum, have additional needs, who have additional, like they could have a physical disability. So it's very important for me to ensure that Belvedere Youth Club is inclusive of all our young people, irrespective of nationality or ability or disability, you know. And we are seeing more young people now present with symptoms of being like on the spectrum, having additional needs. And that's quite challenging because a lot of the parents or guardians want their young people in mainstream clubs. And that's fine, they're entitled to that. But then we have to look at the dynamics of that. And does a group in, like, does that young person sue being in the hall when there's loads of noise? They might shy away from noise. You know, have we got the capacity to deliver a one-to-one programme with that young person? Do we need to set up special needs or additional needs groups, for instance? So that's all. A practice now needs to change, because the needs of our young people are changing. So at the moment, there's a lot of work going on. I've linked in with, as I am as well. So they have an OT that works in Ballymun and delivers workshops from there. So I'm going to look at trying to roll that out here now as well, moving forward. But the challenge lies in if the parents admit that the child has additional needs, or the child could be still waiting on an assessment. That's another issue. But we'd probably see the child presenting with the needs. And it's very hard for us to kind of say that, because we're not qualified. But we'd know from dealing with all the other groups of young people, you know. So it's a new space that we're entering, but I believe with the right support and getting support from the right groups, that we can still deliver a quality service to those young people too, because they deserve it. I think it's helping. It is helping with integration, do you know? So that whole reflective piece. So our young people, like, obviously the check-ins, the circles, working with them in a restorative way is building, it's limited, but it is important to build their emotional capacity. Mm. So if we see something or hear something as walkers on the ground that's not too nice, and maybe it could be a little bit evil probably, or naughty against another young person, like, it's good for us to call that out straight away, you know, and to support a young person to become reflective in that. And, you know, like, okay, how would you feel if so-and-so said that to you? You know, so I believe it's really helping with the integration. And in fairness, we haven't had a lot of bullying, or like, bullying definitely wouldn't be tolerated in Belvedere Youth Club, but you will get people who's going to try. It's natural. And especially like in this community where there's an awful lot of, okay, so there's a saying, monkey see, monkey do, you know? And there's an awful lot of parents and guardians that probably have a little bit of prejudice against new communities, you know? And obviously young people are hearing that. Do you know, so, but while they're in here, everybody's included, and it doesn't matter, you know. So we've had little or no incidences that's come to my attention of continuous bullying, or we've probably had one or two isolated incidents, but they've been nipped in the bud straight away.
Kira and Peppa, youth workers more recently recruited, talk about the day-to-day challenges they face when it comes to inclusivity.
I think we try to be inclusive, and I think a lot of the time as a team we like to think that we are, but I think when it generally comes to inclusion of different cultures and different people from different backgrounds, I don't think we are as inclusive as we should be or would like to be. I think there's definitely a separation. For example, some of the young people come from the address around the corner, and there's a clear divide between those young people and the young people that come from the local community. Even like an example that I've brought up a few times now is a lot of the children, I think it's called haram, like they can only eat certain foods, and that's not catered for, like halal foods and stuff. I think that it would be really, really important to have that, because it means that some of the young people don't get fed, like when they come in, and they might be like coming from disadvantaged areas, you don't always get full meals at home. I think part of here is having the hot dinners and things like that, so I think it would be amazing to have that catered for, and it does sort of bring that spotlight onto the lack of inclusivity in certain areas of the work. Football definitely helps. I think it promotes inclusion, but at the same time then when you have two young people who, like, we call them like pickies, so they get to choose who is going to be on what team, and people from those sort of different backgrounds are usually left to last. So I think the young people would really benefit from different workshops about different cultures and things like that, rather than just sort of leaving them to it and hoping that they pick up on it. And, you know, I think if you could have positive exposure to different cultures for them, like if we had sort of maybe a culture day even, where we had sort of an open day in the club and set up different sort of tables in the hall maybe, and had people from different cultures come in and bring different foods with them and different things like that represent their culture, and have the young people come in and have that experience and see that sort of different perspective, because particularly in the inner city, it's very close-knit community. It's all sort of, everything stays within that. So to sort of break away from that and have them experience life outside that and what other people are going through and have a very open, honest conversation about it would really, really help.
I think it could be more. I think the kids, I think, say things a lot like racial slurs and stuff that they don't realise what they're saying and things like that. Like, that's one thing that kind of gets me a little bit. obviously correct them and say, don't say that. But I don't think they realise, like, the... Yeah. I'm not their teacher. I'm not going to sit down and give them an education class. But I think that's more of a bigger cultural thing in the area. But I do think the club could be more diverse, definitely. And I think the kids, the younger ones, like, they'd benefit a lot from that. Because sometimes they're angrier, they call each other certain names. And, like... It's just really, not that it's fine because they're that person or someone of that nationality or colour wouldn't be there. So the kids are kind of like, oh, it's fine, I can say it. But then it means that, say, if the club did have members, like, it would make me feel really uncomfortable with some of our kids going around saying those sort of words and things. So that's, I do think the club could be a bit more inclusive. But I know that's something they are trying, like the management and stuff. You can't really force something like that. No. It's hard. So it's not as if the club isn't being open and stuff. But I know that's not like a Belvedere issue. Like, it's a wider community issue. But that's just something, like, some of the words and stuff the kids are saying, like, I just really don't think... I don't think they know the meaning behind it, and I think if they did, maybe they wouldn't be saying it, but it's just in their vocab now, so they just don't really care or think of it. I don't know.
Lastly, opening the doors is also about reaching out and connecting with corporate and community organizations. Jonathan, youth team lead, presents the different initiatives over the years and their purpose. Emma refers to Emma Wheatley, who is the program coordinator of the Early Learning Initiative in the National College of Ireland. Martin and Greg are local Gardaí, more precisely juvenile liaison officers.
So me and Emma were basically involved in conversations. Emma would have brought me into the training. I would have brought the training back to the youth club. I would have introduced Paul to the training. Paul would have then gone and done training. So we built a relationship with Emmett that was a really good relationship that allowed Emmett to come in here and us to go out there as well. And through them conversations and relationships, what we did was we worked with Arthur Cox for many years, 4 years. So what we did was we took restorative conversations from Belvedere Youth Club to a corporate company. But again, ELOI didn't work with young people directly, so they needed to come to us. It was a relationship that we had with them that we said, okay, we can see the benefit for the young people through social mobility. Building a relationship between young people and corporates created avenues and space for these young people. It also created a space where the corporates got an opportunity to see what the community looks like, and if they wanted to help or they wanted to further develop that relationship. One core relationship that developed out of that was through a woman called, her name is slipping my mind at the moment, but she's working in the Human Rights Commission at the moment. She still stays in contact with us. She comes in to see the young people all the time, such as the relationship she has. She also creates avenues for the young people to get involved in work experience and various different programs. So that's one initiative with Arthur Cox that we're doing. We've subsequently done that with a number of different corporates. What's it? Northern Berger Berman. Are you familiar with Northern Berger Berman? Only recently we had them in doing a throwback Thursday. It was every Thursday they sent volunteers over from the office, and the idea again was building relationships, and then we brought the young people to their offices. But the next step for that would be creating a space where they can hear restorative language and restorative conversations, and maybe if some of them want to get trained, they can get trained also, and hopefully they'd use that in their everyday operation. So we've done that with about 6 companies to date. We started in 2017, and to date we've done it with 6 companies. There's Bank of Ireland, there's Arthur Cox, there's Northern Berger Berman, Ernest & Young, and there's a couple of other companies that slipped me, the biggest company that's helping out with here, SNBC Aviation, and I think Citibank then as well. So again, it's linking into them. So there would have been a thing called, if you know, a CSR, Corporate Social Responsibility.
Yeah.
So initially when I started on this journey, I would have been thinking of that, okay, these corporates have a responsibility, they can come in and help us out. But it's when I developed a relationship with these companies, I realised that instead of being CSR, it's CRO. So now it's CSS, Corporate Social Solidarity.
Okay.
So more than responsibility, we're going to solidarity, whereas we're working together and we're growing from that. So that's the external agencies that we're working with on the company level, right? On a more sort of community level, we've developed the YOT. So YOT is a young offender team, and that's moving towards more youth justice, and it's going a bit towards more youth justice. But again, we're using restorative conversations. So whether or not you want to say restorative justice or restorative practice, we're using that restorative conversation. And in that sort of community, we basically have a judge
from Ireland's the main judge in the children's court. We have Extern, who have a couple of youth diversion programs. We have YPP, which is Young People Probation. We have the local guards, and we have the local community as well. So we're trying to create that. But again, it's I embarked on this journey whilst we are still in house trying to do our thing. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that I'm a maverick and I run off and do things, but at the same time, while you're doing this, that's great. But if there's things here and there's a gap in the market and you can fill that, why not do it as well, you know? So I was lucky enough to be the one that had a relationship with all these community activists, and they came to me, they approached me. But that relationship was built through the National College. Basically, ELI created training where Emma and Martin delivered it. I built a relationship with Martin. But what I subsequently found out was Martin used to basically arrest me and chase me around Summerhill when I was a young person. So we reminisced about that, and then that further developed a relationship. And then through Martin, I've built a lot of other relationship with Greg, who's a local JLO, local sergeant. I built the Whitty superintendent. But I've also worked with Anthony Corcoran, who was up in MYP2, and he would have been my youth worker many years ago. So the start of practice basically allowed me to reconnect with all these people. Do you know what I mean? So Martin and Greg are local JLO sergeants, right? So what they do is they'd be landed with a number of different profiles on their desk, right? So what they would do is they'd look at them profiles, look at where the young people is from, and then they'd identify me as either a community member or a restorative practitioner within the community. So what they do is they'd say to the young person, okay, young Dorothy, you have to commit a crime. So I'll tell you, one lad recently stole a bike, okay, of a back garden, but he was basically charged for burglary, right? So his mother was up in arms saying, this is massive, what's going on here? This is a more serious person at all. His mother has a relationship with me. Greg approached me and goes, I'm speaking to Dorothy here. Dorothy's young son is 15 and he's either been involved in a burglary. He goes, if he doesn't engage in this process, I can see this becoming more formal and going to court. Is there any chance you've been sitting on that, John? So he wouldn't even brief me when I went in. I'd come in and what he'd do is he'd say, okay, did ask the mother, how is this impacting you and what have you got to say about it? Then he'd ask the young person, then he'd ask the guard, then he'd ask me. So we'd go around a circle and talk about how it's impacting and what we can do. And that's sort of how they brought me into it. I do at least 3 of them per week, I'd say, for a half an hour. I walk around the station and have that conversation. In an ideal world, I'd like the station to come around here and do it on Beverly U Club. But at the same time, this is work in progress. So the severity of the charges the severity of the pending charges. If the young person knows that they're going to get involved in this conversation and they might not get charged, you might think, the young person's going to get involved in that conversation. But at the same time, if the young person is to rebuild a relationship with me, build a relationship with the guards, that's a safety net for them as well, you know?
Thank you for listening to our podcast and stay tuned for our next episodes.